All right, good morning. Welcome into the program. Bill Ryder with you. Amazing to be back. Thank you to all the guys and the folks who filled in for me last week. First and foremost among them, Ryan Hickey, the executive producer. I think Monday, Friday last week. I wasn't paying attention. I was celebrating my 20th wedding anniversary. Thank you to the bosses for letting me do the unusual thing of taking off that much time in the football season. I had a great time. It's even better to be back. It is crazy, because I left the country, how quickly the world moves when you miss just 6 or 7 sports days. I wish I had missed an extra day. I came back Saturday. I landed at LAX. I rushed home to watch my Cubs win game 5 against the Brewers and a miraculous comeback in that series to go to the NLCS. Welcome. That was a you are back to reality. You are back in America moment. Oh, yeah, they're the Cubs. They're the Cubs. So we will talk a little baseball. It's been a great postseason. We will catch me up with some of the main things that I missed over the last 8 or 9 days. We'll get into that Chiefs win. It's a big win. It's a big win against Detroit last night. And one of those Lions players taking exception to, I suppose, the losing, maybe the officiating. Maybe he's just a hothead, a little bit of a fracas at the end of the game. Joe Theismann's going to be on the show. We'll do buy or sell. Because it's me, I had a very surreal, bizarre moment on my vacation I will tell you about. There are so many things to catch up on. I do want to visit with Ryan Hickey. We'll do that next segment. I've missed that guy. I've missed you. If you want to call and say what's up, 888-710 for ISN, sports writer on X Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Many of you, I try to get back to most of you, sent me very nice anniversary congratulations notes while I was gone. Thank you. If I wrote you back, then you know I appreciate you. If I didn't, I still appreciate you. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. I like to give Ryan a hard time, but I actually feel bad for him. He's a Penn State fan. That's what he is. He's a Penn State fan. And one thing that didn't change during my time away is that James Franklin had lost control. He'd lost the handle. He'd let go of the rope on his program. And obviously what has happened since then is his program has let go of him. James Franklin, be gone. And there's a lot of ways to chop this up and dice this up, and I'm not doing it with any enjoyment. I like to give my friends, and Ryan is one of them, a hard time when it's not that serious. I'm not the guy that reaches out when your team goes down in a Bartman game. Or in this case, when your team loses Northwestern, giving you 3 losses in a row, making you literally the first team in the history of college football to lose consecutive games as 20-point or more favorites. And to add injury to the great insult of that fact, Ryan had to dig that stat up as part of his job. I didn't know that. I wasn't luxuriating in the darkness of Penn State. So James Franklin's arrogance got in the way. His inability to take the consequences of his actions got in the way. For whatever reason, and the speed of college football is so much faster and quicker now. And I don't just mean the way that the game evolves and the way that your competition, opposing teams, are going to come at you with coordinators and coaches who have to keep up. But that's part of it. I don't just mean the way in which rosters vastly change overnight. The transfer portal has changed this game from a you got to win while you incubate to you got to incubate and win at the same time. They are the exact same process. It also comes at you quickly in the sense that when you create something, when you succeed, when you get to what you think is the top of the mountain, it comes with a whole different set of rules. The terrain is different. And the only thing more important and maybe more difficult in any profession, but certainly as a coach in college football, where everything is different and faster, the expectations are wider and more intense for the reasons I just laid out. The only thing harder than getting to the top or near the top of the summit of that sport is trying to stay there. And we thought, and people speculated, and I told you this wasn't true whenever this happened a few years ago, that expanding the college football playoff was going to make it easier for people and programs to keep their jobs. That's just not true. What it does is it raises the bar and it raises the expectations. Look, do I think James Franklin gets fired 5 years ago if this run happens? Probably still, because it's so ugly. But the fact is that losing to Oregon a few weeks ago probably would have taken Penn State out of a 4-team college football playoff, maybe, and losing to UCLA basically would have done it. And so what would have happened is the pressure would have lessened. And while the ugliness of being the favorite for a lot of people this year in college football wouldn't have gone away, while it doesn't get rid of the stain of failure for what Penn State was and should have been. By the way, Drew Aller went down in this last game. It's not like he got hurt for the season. Poor dude. Brutal. A couple weeks ago. Had it been 5 years ago, Penn State would have failed, but the failure would have kind of receded into, their season's over. And some of the pressure would have lifted. And some of the, okay, we got to do it next year, would have happened. Look, Franklin's been there a long time. He's had a massive amount of success. They gave him a bunch of money. He's walking away with $50 million in a buyout, which is another thing about this sport. Be careful with the money that you give, because the sport changes so quickly, and the difficulty of maintaining life on the summit is so hard, you could find yourself in the unenviable, impossible catch-22 position of the folks who run that university, where I understand why you paid him, and now you have to let him go. And the cost of that mistake is $50 million, to say nothing of the years and the time and the failure of this season. But the fact is, because college football has so many opportunities to make the playoff, because it has expanded reasonably the expectations for what is possible. If you make the college football playoff, you can win a national championship, even if you can't really win a national championship. Though I'm done using Indiana as an example for that. What a run they've been on. But let's say you're Nebraska, who, by the way, now have to worry that their coach, who has massive connections to Penn State, let's say you're Nebraska. Is Nebraska going to win a national championship this year? I will go on a limb, and I will say there is 0.0% chance that they're going to win a national championship this year. But you know what? They are 5-1. They have turned things around. What, they just broke into the AP top 25? I think that's where they are, 25th, I believe. They can convince themselves reasonably in Lincoln, Nebraska. You know what? Like, if we win these games, and we win out, or we do this, maybe we can get into a situation, and we can be in the college football playoff, and if you're in, you can do it. And that raising of stakes creates for the programs that should win, that can win, that should have real expectations, the reality, if you don't get there, if you're James Franklin, he can all come crumbling down. The fact is, there's so much more pressure now if you're a coach who's supposed to succeed. And one of the ultimate characteristics, therefore, of massive success or moderate success, of keeping your job, of keeping your ability to continue to coach at this level, becomes, can you handle massive pressure even if you haven't necessarily earned it? And I'm not saying James Franklin wasn't impressive. He was. College football playoff semifinal last year, lost to Notre Dame, what a run. Yay, we did it with Penn State. But I want to point your attention to what Nick Saban created at Alabama. What Dabo created and now is having trouble maintaining at Clemson. By the way, both those guys created it. Dabo actually created that level at a program that had never done that. Saban obviously went to a place that had Bear Bryant and success since Bear Bryant, but was on the downturn. And that level of success and expectation, that level of greatness, at a time when only two teams had a chance at a national championship, and then for a while, only four teams had a chance at a national championship, the fact they were always in it meant they had to live up to this rare level of expectation. This, you gotta live up to play best, exceed your greatest hits. That's hard for anybody to do. Any artist or coach or person that's in the public limelight. Now in 2025, the same level of expectation that Dabo earned, that Saban earned, that Kirby Smart now has earned, applies to Notre Dame, which hasn't earned it. Applies to Penn State, which hasn't earned it. Look, we can all celebrate Lane Kiffin, and I'm not taking shots. He's going to get to a point where that's going to be expected. And James Franklin couldn't handle that. At a time where the world was coming at you so much faster, where patience is at an all-time low because the view, the idea of expectation is higher, you have to have someone who can handle success the way Nick Saban did. And what does that mean? Well, it means the disease of more, which I think is a very real thing, can't get in your way as a coach. In a lot of ways, James Franklin is the caricature of how we used to, I think, misdescribe 15 years ago some superstar college athlete who got paid under the table and became bigger than his, what is the expression, his britches? I think that's the expression. And had to hold, and we would go, oh, he's immature and he's young and he's getting money and he lost his way. And look, an example of ego before it really accomplished anything. It was easier to paint a 20-year-old kid that way, 20-year-old young man. James Franklin's the same thing. Because he went from being a really good coach at a program like Penn State that was somewhere between the elite and whatever the B level is, to being a guy suddenly woke up and he's got tens of millions of dollars in a contract. He's got a transfer portal where he can bring people in. He's got this window, and his ego went to the moon. And this isn't a secret. This isn't me taking unfair shots. This guy was palpably unlikable. Wouldn't take any blame at press conferences. Thought it was beneath him to have to answer questions about Penn State's inability to get to the level that certainly people in Happy Valley thought they should. That is obnoxious and off-putting, and maybe more importantly, it is destructive to a program if you're Nick Saban and you've already done it. If you're Kirby Smart and you've already done it. If you're Dabo and you've already done it. If you're Urban Meyer and you've done it. Do you know what the common thread between Dabo and Urban Meyer is? The more they became unwilling to even hear the idea of the suggestion they weren't infallible, their infallibility started to go away. It is a fine line when you're a massive success to hold on to what made you successful when you're surrounded by sycophants and can just look down at people who don't tell you you're God's gift to, in this case, football. James Franklin was the exact same way, minus the rings, minus the national championships. Wasn't likable. Couldn't succeed at the level he was supposed to. And so when things got difficult for someone that had never actually won the big, big game, and few people do it, I get it. He didn't know how to handle it. He didn't know how to channel it. He didn't know how to protect his players from the thing he was creating. And so, yeah, did he succeed at a certain level at Penn State? 100%. But you don't get hired in this business by the people that hire you to get 50 million buyouts. Maybe that's why you do what you do. You don't get hired at a certain level of expectation to be a semifinalist in the national, in the playoff. You don't. Am I proud of my Chicago Cubs for coming back against the Brewers? I don't know. I want you to be in the NLCS. Do you want me to tell you how amazing a college football team or a Super Bowl team, would-be team, an NFL team, or a Major League Baseball team is, or an NBA team is, who didn't win a championship in the last 10 years? No. No, nobody cares about the Phoenix Suns when Chris Paul was there. Because you have to win at a certain level. And James Franklin couldn't do it. And he told on himself on Saturday, by the way. I'm not even going to play you the clip. Because he knew. Before he went out there and lost his third consecutive game. Let me just say this again. All right, you lose to Oregon. I mean, not great. Now, Oregon just lost to Indiana. Not great. But okay, Oregon's really good. Then you lose to UCLA, which is basically, I don't know if it's a joke of a program, but it's certainly not at the level. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here of Penn State? And then you have Northwestern. And you can't win that game. You shouldn't be in the job. And so before the Northwestern loss on Saturday and after the other two losses, I'm not going to play this for you because I don't want to. James Franklin was asked if he still wanted to coach the team, and he wouldn't answer the question, which is his obnoxiousness. The question's beneath me. But you know what it sounded like? It sounded like Penn State was beneath him. It sounded like the fans were beneath him. It sounded like the people that paid him tens of millions of dollars eventually, 24 hours later, to go away, were beneath him. And maybe that's not how he meant it. Maybe he, like that 20-year-old quarterback 15 years ago, didn't know how to handle this thing thrust upon him that partially he earned, partially he didn't. Who cares? You're the coach. It's your job to figure it out. It's your job to figure it out. He couldn't even say, of course I want to be here. He did this rigmarole. No. The telling part where he told himself, the part where if you were listening closely enough, you knew they were going to, if not lose to Northwestern, that already lost the season, is when he was asked, and I want to frame this for you. He was asked whether all the noise out there, the frustration, if it cost his players. Do you remember how often Nick Saban, good or bad, would basically say his players got to stop listening to the media? It is, Nick Saban never said the media shouldn't write it. He never said, that's like saying fans shouldn't get excited. Just because I go to a Missouri, it's a bad example this weekend, but I go to a Missouri tailgating, get hammered on 7 Budweisers, my God, we're going to win the whole thing, doesn't mean that their quarterback should be paying attention to that. But that doesn't mean I should be celebrating. I can't have a 7th Budweiser. I'm not allowed to be a fan. I can't be excited. It's the coach's job to shepherd and shield his players from that guy and the media guy and the pundits and the radio hosts and the expectations and the boosters. And by the way, the professors and chancellors and everyone else who see these kids on campus, these young men, and go, you're going to do it. You got it. This is not my fault or your fault for loving sports and talk about the teams that matter. And so when you're asked about, does the noise get in the way? The answer is shut up. No, of course not. How dare you? We have a professional sports team. You do your thing. We do our thing. James Franklin told us on Saturday, ask that question. Does the noise affect your team? What he really said in this clip is, I don't know how to handle this thing I haven't even succeeded at yet.
We have worked really hard to keep the building as positive and close out all that noise as we possibly can. But for me to say that it doesn't impact them would not be honest.
I would have fired him there. I would have walked down there before he lost Northwestern and said, you're gone, you're fired, get out of here. And I'm not kidding. I guess I'm kind of kidding because if I'd have to call the board, we'd have to have a special meeting like they did on Sunday, and they'd have to pass the resolution, it's $50 million. That is unacceptable. And that's unacceptable in 1995. That's unacceptable in 2002. That's unacceptable in 2012. Where we are today is that the rate of speed that I told you about of college football and expectations is so in hyperdrive that you are fired as a coach if you underachieve whatever the expectations of your program immediately. Great stat that Ryan found from my former friends, at CBS Sports, my former shop. These are coaches that were fired or resigned, right? No one's resigning on October 3rd because they decided they want to go and be a painter. So people that basically were out before November 1st, by the end of October, from 2004 to 2012, I'll do the math for you, 8 years, 13 people. Over the next 4 years, 12 to 16, 17 coaches were gone in that tenure before November 1. From 21 to 24, this doesn't even include the guys this year that have gone away. 18 of them. 18. James Franklin, now the latest. In that environment, you can't be saying, yes, the noise, my team not beating Oregon or UCLA is part of the reason we lost. You should be fired. Saying, yeah, the noise of people, a lot of people thought we were the best team in the country and could win the whole thing this year, that you can't handle that, you should be fired. The man is arrogant. He is off-putting. He is unlikable. All that is fine if you win. For a time. It does come back to get you. It got Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's not a moron, even though I call him one. Urban Meyer's a football genius. Urban Meyer did things that were unprecedented. Urban Meyer had a stretch where it was reasonable to think, on a timeline going forward, this is 10 years ago, that he could be the greatest college football coach of all time, and that was recognizing Saban's greatness. Do you know who stopped Urban Meyer? Urban Meyer did. And he actually won national championships. He actually put together maybe, I know it's a maybe, but maybe the greatest single season in college football history, just in terms of the best team that we've seen. This is a guy who did it when you only got one bite of the apple. James Franklin never did what Urban Meyer did, never did what Dabo did, never did what Saban did, never did what Kirby Smart did, didn't even do what Harbaugh did. And he still walked around and acted like he was God's gift to football. That's why he's fired. That's why he's gone. His unlikability, the fact I don't mind that he got fired, and he doesn't mind either, he's got $50 million, isn't the reason he should be fired. He should be fired because of his unlikability was a product and parcel and a part and connected to the fact that he couldn't handle the pressure, he couldn't lead his team, and as they got to a place where they could do something, they crumbled under the weight of that. That's on a coach. That's not on your 19-year-old linebacker or your quarterback who came back. By the way, Aller could have been a first-round pick last year. That guy came back because he loved his school, and his season is wasted and his season is over. James Franklin is a reminder that there's so much money in the sport, which means there's so much money going to coaches. There's so much expectation that you better be able to handle that as a coach. It is not enough to get to a semifinal of the college football playoff. You have to be able to handle what follows that, the expectations, the opportunities, the rush of guys that want to play for your program all of a sudden, how you figure out who should and shouldn't be there. James Franklin is the poster child for how quickly this sport moves, the hyperspeed with which success can turn to failure if you're arrogant, if you're overwhelmed by what's happened, and if you don't know how to marshal all the things in the world that you have helped put together. Good riddance to that guy. All right, I'm going to get Ryan's opinion on who he wants. I said Matt Rhule, and he made a face. I was like, oh, he's going to love Matt Rhule. I think Matt Rhule's from there. He certainly is an alum. He's turned around, question mark, it's early Nebraska. Based on the look on Ryan's face, he may not want him. But it may just be because I had to talk about James Franklin for, let's look, 19 minutes. 19 minutes, which is how long it feels like he lasted in that job when you sort of think about as a team, as a coach of a team that was supposed to win the whole thing. All right, got a lot to get to. I got a funny story about my trip. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4ISN. Let's ask Ryan this doozy. Who would he rather have, Matt Rhule or Urban Meyer and dysfunction? More Penn State talk and a bunch of other stuff as I catch up on sports. It's great to be back. Next year, I'm Ryder Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
This is where total hypocrisy reigns. And I know this. I'm a piece of garbage here. I got it. I'm a bad guy here. I understand. Don't care.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Great to be back. Appreciate you listening. Thanks for all the notes. By the way, we're down to 7 or 8 people left in the Survivor pool. And so we don't have time today to get into this. There's a lot to get to. I want to get to this phone call. There's a lot happening. I got to talk to Ryan. I want to catch up on some things. But this week, we will go over the Survivor pool. The winner of that gets the name Bum of the Week. I'm out. Ryan's been out for like since negative week one or something. No, we both went out back-to-back weeks, I believe. We'll have to come up with a tiebreaker. I've come up with a few ideas because we could have had a situation yesterday where somebody won, but there's also a world where everybody gets eliminated at the same time, so we'll come up with that and just let you know so it feels fair. Phone number is 888-710-4ISN. Let's go to Hotlanta. It's probably not hot there right now. Jason's on the line. Jason, thank you for listening, buddy. You're on Ryder Than You.
Bill, welcome back. You were missed.
Thanks, buddy.
This is more of a Ryan Hickey appreciation call.
Okay.
I'm a fellow Penn Stater, so prior to getting on with you here, he and I were commiserating slash rejoicing over the events of the weekend. And
right.
I'm not sure if you had an opportunity to listen, but on Friday, his impassioned nomination and anointment of Franklin as Bum of the Week was just, I think, hopefully played a minor small part in you know, his getting kicked to the curb. And I just wanted to say that he's you know, exceptional at what he does. And if there's anybody who, you know, is going to fill the void while you're gone, happy it was him.
Jason Hickey calling from Long Island. Just kidding. No, Jason in Atlanta. No, I agree. I didn't listen. I was in Paris with my wife. I was in Paris. And so what was I doing on Friday when Ryan was doing the show? I was drinking and eating a bunch of food and hanging out with my wife, and it was great. But let's bring in Ryan Hickey. Good morning, Ryan Hickey. How are you? Thank you for standing in a couple days last week. I heard you crushed it, and I have no doubt that not all of it. 20% of James Franklin being fired was being Bum of the Week again, because that resonates in American sports culture.
And it does, once you get now multiple nominations and, I guess, victories, if you want to say that, of Bum
right.
of the Week, it really, really weighs heavy on the soul.
He could be Bum of the Year. I told you this before the show. There's a long ways to go. You're not out of the race there yet. I mean, I'm always in the running. There's a few other bums. He's only won two, but, I mean, to intentionally take the Titanic and steer it into an iceberg, what is he doing? What a colossal level of failure he has put you through. And I am genuinely sorry.
Honestly, it had to happen. It's fine. Like this is, you go all in, you know the issues with him, can't win a big game. It happens again. And so you know what? I said it after they lost Oregon. If it takes losing every game to fire him, end the era, and move on, I'd sign up for it. All it took was losing two more games. Granted, shocking games, but still, I think he got the end result that he wanted.
People roll their eyes sometimes, especially sports writers who become a little inured to the reality of human psychology in sports, which is a stupid, fancy way of saying chokers choke and winners win. And there's not everyone fits that category, but people do. And I had a colleague, John Gonzalez, who used to work at CBS Sports. I like John. But John was like, if it wasn't a math equation, he thought it was beneath him, beneath everyone else. And it's infected this world where it's, you know, oh, he choked. He didn't choke. What are you talking about, man? These are human beings. They're not robots. They're not robots. And you make a great point. He couldn't win the big game. And I'll add to that. When you get to a level where you're look, was he expected to win a national championship if you're sitting in Tuscaloosa? No. But many people in America expected Penn State to be in the national championship game, to win that national championship. Now, the concentration of those people were heaviest in Happy Valley, but you could move outward, east, west, north, south. You can get to Toronto or Los Angeles or anywhere else, and there were people who go, yeah, they could do it. That makes every game huge. And that means when you lose to Oregon, all of a sudden UCLA is a big game, even though it shouldn't be. And when you lose to UCLA, it makes Northwestern a big game, even though it shouldn't be. And to your point, he couldn't win the big game. And when you are a program, like the ones I mentioned, when you're Bama, by the way, Bama had a big win against Missouri. They're looking pretty good. I'm not taking shots. But when you're Bama under Saban, when you're Clemson, especially under Dabo 3 or 4 years ago, I can't believe it's been that long, when you're Georgia under Kirby Smart, when you're Florida back in the day under Urban Meyer or Ohio State under Urban Meyer, when you're Ohio State now, every game is a big game when you get on the margin of accomplishing the minimum of what's expected. And the minute they lost to Oregon, that was the reality. The minute they lost to Oregon, UCLA became a big game. A big game you should win? Look, Oregon-Indiana was a big game. And Oregon was supposed to win that game and didn't. And I like the Indiana head coach saying, I'm a winner. Google me. Look me up. I win. James Franklin's a loser, and you make a great point. Can I tell you, I know we have a lot to get to. Can I tell you a quick, I think, funny story about Paris?
Please, let's hear it.
Well, first of all, I use points, right? So those of you listening, I travel a lot or have, and so I basically stay at these. I went to a fancy hotel. They definitely were wondering what I was doing there. But it turned, so every day that Lori and I left, so it was, do you know what Fashion Week is? I don't really understand it, but I accidentally booked our trip during Fashion Week in Paris.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was in a real small room. I'm used to being upgraded. I was in a real small room. They hid me. Please go. This is your special door. It's the back exit. The first 5 days we were there, when we walked out of our hotel room, there were thousands of people outside of the door of the hotel screaming and cheering for someone. We were trying to figure out who was there, right? What's going on? It was one of the people from BTS, the Korean pop band. So I guess they're a big deal. So it turned out one day we just stood next to that dude in line at the bar, and I tried to cut in front of him on accident, and people freaked out. I thought because I cut in front of a normal customer, I cut in front of a pop star. And then one day when we went out, and everyone started cheering, and I turned to Lori and I go, "Are they big brighter than you fans?" I thought it was a funny joke. They weren't. Get out of the way. This woman goes, "I live for you," and Lori's like, "She's not speaking to you." But it was weird, dude.
Wow, that's, I mean, cool and also kind of annoying to kind of be swept up
annoying.
In that. And, like, you kind of got
hard,
a little taste of the
hard to get in
life.
The hotel. Like, even before the crowds, they didn't think I should be there. Try getting in the hotel when you're me in Fashion Week in Paris. And they were very put out when they checked me in, you know. Welcome, sir. And they, like, saw the points. They're like, one of these guys. One of these guys. I can't afford that hotel.
Look, apologize to no one. Sorry.
Is BTS a big deal? I guess.
From the little I know, yes. I don't know. I haven't heard
Korean
one song.
Music?
I don't know if it's even translated to here.
I think they had one hit.
But overseas, maybe. I think they're a huge, huge deal, especially Korea.
Jennifer Lawrence was apparently in Paris. I was really hoping it was Jennifer Lawrence. You know, what's up? I mean, not that way. Just, how's it going? It's my wife, Lori.
Yeah, just friend. Just be friendly with Jennifer Lawrence. She seems like a cool girl.
Hanging out.
Yeah.
I mentioned this earlier. I did land at LAX. We went right through, I don't know how, customs, the fastest I've ever gone. I thought it was the baseball gods. Because a lot of times, last time I came back from out of the country, it took me 2 hours to get through passport control. 10 seconds, I got an Uber immediately. There was no traffic. It was the baseball gods, I thought, rushing me to my home to watch my Cubs win game 5 against the Milwaukee Brewers. It was just the baseball gods reminding me, no matter how nice my vacation was with my wife, I'm back in reality and the Cubs are still the Cubs. Brutal. I'd rather be swept. My son was Henry and Malin didn't go with us. My parents, God bless them, were watching my kids, and I kept telling my son, they can win this, just win one game, the momentum will turn, and I talked myself into it when they got to, and I missed that Mariners game. Did you make it? You didn't stay up for that game, right?
I passed out in the 10th or 11th inning.
And how did the Yankees fans, I know we're going to get to this in a second, how the Yankees fans, I hate to admit this, I have nothing, I don't know why I feel this. I was kind of happy when I saw the Yankees. I wasn't watching. I was not monitoring other than the Cubs. I was monitoring, but it was hard to watch there. But I was kind of happy when the Yankees got knocked out.
Kind of. Try very. Very. Come on. Come on. Lean into it.
There was a lot of joy.
A little toast from Paris. Oh, no. Another Yankee season's over. Damn.
I'm excited about any of these teams to win. I know the Dodgers are kind of been there, done that, and I understand maybe a lot of people feel about the Dodgers the way that I feel about the Yankees, but I live in L.A., I like the organization, but even though the Brewers beat the Cubs, and man, they hate the Cubs. I mean, even though I could feel the vitriol through the shouts for the BTS guy all the way over on the other side of the pond. I've said this. I like Milwaukee. I like the organization. I'm pissed off they beat us, but I think it'd be cool if the Brewers won the whole thing. And I'm down with any of the teams that are left. I'm really excited for what's happened in Major League Baseball. And credit to Manfred. I think it's been fun, right? I wasn't here for it, but was it as thrilling watching as it seemed like trying to follow my phone?
Yeah, oh yeah. All these playoff games have been great. Like, even with the Dodgers beating the Phillies, it was a great back-and-forth series. Like, and three of the four teams left would be an outstanding story if they won the World Series.
I know. I'm here for it.
It's great for baseball. Great for baseball.
I wish it was the Cubs. Wish it was the Mets. That would be more fun. Was Cubs playing the Mets right now?
That'd be a lot.
But it's not.
That'd be toxic.
I mean, boy, they're both losers too. I don't know. It'd be somebody have to win. That's how the Cubs won the World Series against Cleveland. All my friends in 2016 are like, we can't win. I go, neither can Cleveland. It's a catch 22.
Why
it's
not
a paradox.
Us?
It's got to be somebody. They can't tie. It's not. They're not allowed. All right. Good to be back. Good to see you. Great work filling in, Ryan Hickey. Here's what we're going to do. Ryan has put together, through his tears and his joy, he's got mixed feelings about where Penn State's at, because at least James Franklin got fired. Five things that I guess I need to know. It's for me. Well, catching me up on what I missed while I was gone. We'll do that after a sports flash from Justin Rock.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Hey, Bill, before kickoff, get help securing your financial future with Advantage Gold today. Text Gold to 85545 now and request your free gold investment kit or go to AdvantageGold.com for terms. Message and data rates may apply. A tremendous Sunday night football game marred by a post-game scuffle. Brian Branch of the Lions striking the Chiefs' Juju Smith-Schuster in the helmet as Patrick Mahomes went to shake his hand during the final seconds. Lions head coach Dan Campbell not pleased at the podium post-game.
I love Brian Branch, but what he did is inexcusable, and it's not going to be accepted here. It's not what we do. It's not what we're about. I apologize to Coach Reed and the Chiefs and, that's not okay. We that's not what we do here.
The skirmish will be reviewed by the league office, and potential discipline will be determined from there. After being suspended 6 games, Rasheed Rice reinstated by the league. He's available for Sunday against the Raiders. 49ers without Fred Warner for the rest of the year. Dislocated and broke his right ankle. Emeka Ebuka expected to miss time for the Bucs with a hamstring injury. With your sports flash at the bottom of every hour, I'm Justin Rock.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
The studies have been done, and people trust and value the intellectual perspectives of attractive people more than unattractive people, even though that has no bearing. That's why people believe me so often. See what I did there?
Sell. On the Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back into Good Looking Radio. I'm Bill Ryder. Thanks for hanging out. Hi, Ryan.
Oh, hello, Bill.
1 to 10 scale. Where do you put yourself? Honestly.
On this show or in life?
No, in life. Looks-wise. What are you? 1 to 10. What are you?
I would gladly take like a 6.5.
Okay. Let me ask you a question. On a scale 1 to 10, what's Matt Rhule? He's the betting favorite, although not starkly so. He's the betting favorite to be the next coach at Penn State. I meant to ask you this last segment. We got sidetracked by BTS. Is that what it is? I always confuse BTS with the bad guy from Wichita. Oh, you know, it's BTS is different than, I don't remember, BTK, different thing.
Oh, I was going to say BTS is an acronym for.
Yeah, no. I think it was B. It was B who was at the hotel that I was at from BTS.
I didn't even know BTS. So it's just the initials.
I didn't either.
Interesting.
I went up to the girl who was screaming, "You're my life!" And she was too, so I asked her friend, and she goes, "Oh, it's BTS. It's BTS. It's B from BTS."
Like, okay, was she cool. Upset wow, at you great. For not knowing, or is she upset that she was there and doesn't really like BTS, but she got dragged there from...
I think she was upset I didn't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Some old guy's like, "What's going on here with the kids?" All right, you don't like Matt Rhule?
No, James Franklin's a better coach than Matt Rhule.
I don't know, man, like... Better coach in practice is different than can win some of those games and get you over the hump.
Look
what he's done.
All
right, here are the betting favorites. Bill O'Brien, Indiana's coach. You ever heard of Lane Kiffin? He's on the list. Manny Diaz, Urban Meyer's on there. Joe Brady, and then it kind of goes on to people that are very unlikely. Would you want any of those names? You want Cignetti?
I would love Cignetti. I don't know. It's crazy. And this is highlighting the new era of college football. He leaves.
He shouldn't
go. You just beat Oregon on the road. Why would you leave?
Why would you go?
I don't think he's going to start over.
There are some places. Look, I think Dabo's the best example of this. Although, I'm trying to think of another. I think what Coach K did at Duke, we take for granted now. But it's not as if Duke was a blue blow when it happened. If you have massive success, and by the way, you're right. Indiana's not having massive success in the sense that they're beating Iowa and they're beating, no offense, Penn State, but they're losing to Ohio State and Michigan, and they're the third best team in the Big Ten. They're playing as the second best team in the Big Ten, and maybe better than that this year.
They're ranked number 3 in the country.
Third team in the country.
Not a fluke. Like this is
Oregon's good.
You beat Oregon on the road by double digits.
Yeah,
you got something real there.
All right, so you want Cignetti. I was surprised to see Lane Kiffin on here. Why would you
Lane
take
Kiffin
this job if you're Lane Kiffin?
Is like James Franklin from a few years ago, where any job that's open, his name is on there. Like, these are also like
I would hire him, like, if I were you guys. If I were you guys, I'd hire him in a heartbeat.
I'm not sold he would go. I think he's more of a Southern guy, and I think he also has his eye on probably like an Alabama job or something like that, if that was to ever open.
Aren't they 6-0? I know I'm playing catch up here as the radio host. I mean, if you're Ole Miss, if you're Lane Kiffin, the same thing applies. Like, why? Unless I think you're stretching it here. You want to pretend that the Big Ten is now 1B again. You're like, okay, Michigan's down, sort of, and Indiana. No, I guess we just praise them. But if you're Lane Kiffin, maybe you go, like, whatever, I can beat Indiana, and Penn State just fired their coach. But I don't buy it. Urban Meyer, you want nothing to do with. You don't want him anywhere near your program.
I mean, if it's, you asked the question before, Matt Rhule or Urban Meyer, I would take Urban Meyer 10 times out of 10.
What?
10 times out of 10.
I don't know, man. He might be broken.
I'd rather hire a guy that could be broken, but I know if he's not, can win the big game, versus Matt Rhule, who can't win the big game, who's like Penn State doesn't need a rebuild in the sense of like they're 3-9 for 5 straight years and you got to build them up. They're right there. They need someone to take him over the top. Matt Rhule can't do that.
He has deep Happy Valley Nittany Lion roots.
Yes, he does. State college resident. Went to school there. Best friends with the AD.
He was a Nittany Cub.
He was.
Grew into a Nittany Lion.
That he did.
Bill O'Brien is the second most likely person. The triumphant return of the king. He was great there.
He was great. He saved the program.
Don't do it, bro.
I don't know if the second act is going to be as good as the first one.
Matt Rhule or Bill O'Brien?
Oh, my goodness. I would probably say Matt Rhule, but I don't feel great about it.
Matt Rhule or the guy that is currently 18-1 to get the job, John Gruden.
Oh, I'll take Matt Rhule. I think John Gruden's a joke.
I think he's a joke, too. Who else is on here? Anybody worth talking about? No. All right, let's do 5 things you need to know that I missed while I was gone.
Your security clearance is on a need-to-know basis. And these are 5 things you need to know. Number 1.
Public service announcement. I don't know if you have it on there. You don't need to put the Chiefs beating Detroit when the officials maybe helped them a little bit and Brian Branch getting all MMA, because I saw last night. Chiefs season, by the way, saved. Chiefs season saved by that game.
Thankfully, had that number 6, so kind of the first out for 5 things. They're on the bubble, just the strength of schedule was not strong enough to get them in this for top 5.
got it.
So you were talking about college football. Let's start with college football, Bill, because last week, reports surfaced that UNC head coach Bill Belichick and the school have already discussed a potential buyout. How about this report from WRAL down in North Carolina? It highlighted the internal dysfunction, favoritism towards certain players, and poor leadership, among other issues right now that are ruining the program. UNC also last week suspended their defensive backs coach Armon Hawkins for recruiting violations. Now, on the field, in 3 games against Power 4 teams, the Tar Heels have been outscored, Bill, 120-33.
Okay, so I know we have to go fast. We don't have a lot of time. But this is the thing that I think I most was frustrated that I missed. I really wanted to see this game. So he's washed, right? That's where we are now?
Yes. Yes. When Dabo and the say that program's embarrassing you, you don't got it.
Okay.
Number 2.
Baseball, the MLB postseason, Bill, down to 4 as the Dodgers, Brewers, Mariners, and Blue Jays all won their respective division matchups last week. Seattle advanced to the first ALCS in 24 years after outlasting the Tigers 3-2 in 15 innings to win that deciding Game 5 on Friday night. Toronto made their first ALCS since 2016 after beating the Yankees in 4 games last week. How about this? The Brew Crew, sorry to say, did take down your Cubs 3-1 in Game 5 to make their first NLCS since 2018, while the Dodgers beat the Phillies in the NLDS. But speaking of Dodgers Brewers, Dodgers have lost all 6 games they've played against the Brewers this season.
Really? That's a good stat.
How about that?
It's a good little factoid.
May see that again in buy or sell as a little hint, hint.
How did we do in our predictions? I meant to look it up, but I didn't.
I took the Mariners to make the World Series. I also took the Phillies to make the World Series. So one team's still alive, one team is dead.
Okay.
We both took the... No, you took the Cubs, I took the Brewers. Oh, no,
I took the Cubs and the Brewers.
We both took the Cubs.
I took the Cubs and the Brewers.
Right.
I took the Brewers to the World Series and the Cubs to the NLCS.
I took the Yankees to win, so I think I was 1-3.
All right.
Crush it.
I discussed this earlier. I didn't follow this as closely as I wanted to, other than the Cubs, which was awesome fight and an ultimate heartbreak. But it's been a great postseason. This format works, by the way. Like, credit to Manfred, it works.
Number 3.
The Bengals upgraded their quarterback room, I guess you could say. They traded last week for Browns QB Joe Flacco. And in his first year yesterday for Cincy, Flacco went 29 of 45 for 219 passing yards and 2 touchdowns. Bengals, though, did lose to the Packers 27-18. That trade, Bill, also meant, from the Browns' perspective, Shedeur Sanders moved up to be QB2. The fifth-round pick battled with practice squad quarterback Bailey Zappe all week last week for the right to back up Dylan Gabriel, and Shedeur won the honor. It was named QB2 on Friday. Shedeur did not play, though, in Cleveland's loss to the Steelers.
I want Shedeur. You wanted the Chiefs to lose because of the storylines. I want Dylan Gabriel to continue to look like he doesn't belong as a starter just yet, because I want to see Shedeur play, and that's not out of any kind of kindness. That is just because I am interested in what that would look like.
Number 4.
The Lakers announced on Thursday that LeBron James will miss the next few weeks as he deals with sciatica. James has yet to participate in a training camp practice and will likely miss at least the season opener on October 21st as they take on the Warriors.
I don't love LeBron right now. We're not in a good place. You know, 20-year marriage, 20 years covering LeBron. Very similar, you know, peaks and valleys. I don't want him to go out like this. I don't want him to go out as Willie Mays, where you're just kind of broken and you're bitter and you're pretending to do decisions based on a drink, which was so obnoxious. He might have been bum of the week had I been here. Was he a finalist?
Looking back, I don't think so.
I'm going to put him on there, even though it's 2 weeks later. I'm going to, because I'm writing this stuff down early.
It's retroactive.
Retroactive. Easy for me to say. Maybe I had some Hennessy.
Number 5.
And finally, Bill, the Eagles offense, while you were away, has been brutal. They blew a 17-3 fourth quarter lead to the Broncos last Sunday as they attempted 38 passes, just 11 runs, got out of sync there, did not get any better on Thursday. They lost 34-17 to the Giants. They were shut out in the second half. Well, now when you look at Philly, they've been outgained in all 6 games they've played so far this season. They rank 30th out of 32 in total offense.
All right, the Eagles offense has been a problem all year long. Let me throw a few others in. Ravens, I guess we're out of time. Ravens season's over. I know it was over when Lamar got hurt, but over. What was the Dylan Gabriel reaction to his first game?
Meh. He's looked okay.
Yeah.
2 touchdowns, but nothing spectacular. But also didn't look totally overwhelmed.
Okay. Let's get him back. Are we out of time? Is that it? That's the hour?
Still 1 hour to go. There's a lot of time left.
And here's the big win. It means Joe Theismann's up next here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Great to be back on the air, and great to have Joe Theismann here. No one I'd rather speak to on my first show back after a week away. Longtime NFL quarterback, Super Bowl champion, MVP, Pro Bowler, friend of the program, on Twitter at Theismann7. Joe, good morning, man. Thanks for making time.
Good morning to you, Bill. Welcome back. I hope you had a great vacation, I guess it was. Where'd you go?
I went, so my wife and I celebrated our 20th anniversary in Paris. It was awesome.
Congratulations. I bet that's wonderful.
It was a lot of fun. We usually travel with our kids, Joe. They're 16 and 13. My parents came in and took them, and I love my kids. It turns out it's really nice to go to Paris without them when you go with your wife. It was a lot of fun.
You do not have to explain. Everybody understands, Phil.
All right, so, Joe, you might be my favorite guest we have, but we're on opposite sides tonight, Commanders-Bears. My Bears against the Commanders. Let's break this down a little bit. This is a big game for each of these teams. Let's start with the Commanders. What are the keys to trying to get this win tonight?
I think we have to play well up front defensively. I think, and they've been doing a real good job. The defensive line, a lot of rotation, a lot of guys have been making plays. Our defense has played really, really solid. You know, they really stepped up against the Chargers last week. Offensively, having Jaden Daniels back makes a world of difference. I mean, it gives that offense so much versatility. Still going to be without Terry. Still going to be without Noah. Debo hopefully will be ready to go, and I expect Ertz to have a bigger role in tonight's game. But and I think we have to be able to run the football. I mean, the Bears up front are stout. You know, Montez left us and went to Chicago and has done a terrific job there. And the guys up front. So I think it becomes a battle of the lines. Who's going to be able to control the offensive and defensive lines?
Joe Theismann here on the show. Joe, not every individual game is a turning point the way that Commanders-Bears feels like it was for both teams last year. But it's, I mean, we're sort of at the, what, one-third point? I'm bad at math. We're starting to get a feel for team. Chicago is coming off a bye week. They've won a couple games in a row. What is your read on how good or mediocre or not good you think Chicago is and their quarterback under Ben Johnson?
I think Ben Johnson's made a world of difference in Caleb Williams. You can see, you know, he protects the ball better. I mean, he's thrown 8 touchdowns, just 2 interceptions through the game, 4 games. I think he's done a much better job getting the ball out of his hands. I think Caleb found out last year that you're not going to run away from 300-pound defensive linemen at this level. When he played in college at USC, you know, you have to say he was either the best or the second best athlete on the field, and you could run away from everybody. But he learned last year you can't, and you can run around and you're still going to get caught. I think he's making good decisions. I think Ben's done a tremendous job with him, and you'll see him grow continually. I think Jaden had that kind of an advantage, Bill, a year ago with Cliff Kingsbury. You know, I think his coordinatorship and his calling of the offense helped Jaden. I don't think anybody helped Caleb last year when it came to calling the offense. You know, they had problems other places, but it was still something he had to learn. And truthfully, as tough a year as it was for Caleb Williams a year ago, I think having a chance to be able to line up and play every week is invaluable to young quarterbacks because you get a chance to study yourself. You're not sitting there studying film of somebody and saying, well, what was he thinking? You know exactly what was being thought. You know exactly the decision you made, and you can grow and learn from that.
Joe Theismann hanging out here on the show. I'm Bill Ryder. Joe, maybe going to 10,000 feet, Jaden Daniels, obviously, massive expectations coming into this year, an incredible run for him and his team last season. It's not always easy to live up to that when you're a young quarterback. What do you make of him as a quarterback now who people aren't going to look past? We know what he can do, a lot more expectations even than last year. Where is he at, do you think, in his game and his development?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Bill. No one has greater expectations of Jaden than Jaden. I've been around the young man. I know his work ethic. I know how he desires to be not good but great and do the things to help this football team win. Truthfully, this offense is coming and limping a little bit. You know, the Bears have had a week off, and the Commanders have lost key people and still have them on the sidelines. And I don't care. You can cut this league up any way you want, but starters are starters and backups are backups. And the backups normally don't play as well as the starters. And so we've got guys that have stepped up and done a good job, and now they're going to have to step up again for us. But, you know, Jaden continues to make good decisions with the ball in his hands. I think for both he and Caleb, because they are mobile quarterbacks, it's protect yourself. Do what you need to do to get ready for the next play. Run out of bounds, slide, whatever you need to do, make sure you can line up for the next play. And I think that's what he's continuing to do and get better and better at. He has all the physical tools, throws the ball well, moves well, avoids trouble well, protects the ball in the pocket well. There's all those things that, you know, check boxes for you. But the big thing is he has to stay on the field, and already he's missed a couple games.
Joe Theismann hanging out here on the show. Joe, I missed, I'm going to be honest, I missed an entire week of football hanging out with my wife in Paris, drinking red wine, eating good food. So I'm playing catch up. What, I'm really curious, and I know it's early, but your read on Dylan Gabriel from what you've seen in Cleveland, is it possible to make any assessments or guesses about how you think he's going to perform this year and what kind of quarterback he maybe can or can't be at this level?
I would be remiss in trying to evaluate him after just a couple of football games. You know, to be honest with you, he has no idea what he's looking at. And you just don't. As a young quarterback, you basically survive on your athleticism. In Dylan's case, is getting the ball out of your hands quickly. It's going to be up to the offense to be able to provide him with opportunities to do that, to be able to get the ball out of his hands. And, you know, I think moving Shadur up to 2 is going to create a lot of conversation. But you have to give him 6, 7, 8 games to see exactly what you have. And then you have to rely on the guys around him. I think it's very difficult to evaluate a young quarterback just after a couple of games. I mean, you know, we had a tough time evaluating Caleb last year through a season. It's just because it's a constant state of growth. You know, there's a process that has to be followed, and very seldom do you see a situation like Jaden's come in. I mean, when you break down the Commanders last year after the Bear game, they were all one-score games, Bill. They could have gone either way for the Commanders last year. They happened to go in a very positive way for them. But it could have very easily been a big difference of, you know, 1-4 as opposed to 4-1 or whatever the number might have been. But I think in Dylan's case, it's how do you get better? How do you study? How do you learn? We've proven in this league that you don't need a big-time arm to be able to play the quarterback position. Now, Brock Purdy doesn't have the strongest arm. Tua's struggling. Tua's struggling in a big way. I mean, he's making, you know, he's throwing interceptions. I mean, when you break it down, I mean, you went away on, you missed some games over the course of this week, but I'll tell you something. We found out one thing, that Justin Fields may not survive the season, having 9 sacks yesterday. And the Kansas City Chiefs are not dead and gone. This is a typical Kansas City Chiefs season. Everybody, they start slow every year, and then they start to find their rhythm, and they start to find their groove, and then they start to sprinkle in enough runs to make you pay attention to it. And and Chris Jones just decided, you know, Chris Jones he's phenomenal. He's a phenomenal football player. To keep him healthy is the key, I think, on Kansas City. Even as much as Patrick is great, he is as great as Patrick is, and what they can do in that offense. Chris is so important to the other side of the ball.
Joe, it's really easy for me to sit in my house, full on French food, totally jet lagged, and judge. And what's true? I'm so jet lagged. Judge and watch sort of guys at this level and how they react. You played, you competed, you know that guys get fired up. Do you have a problem? I mean, I know it's not great what Brian Branch did, but does that cross some kind of a line, or does that stuff happen and we just saw it because there was a big fracas afterwards?
What? Tell me what happened. I missed that.
So
game.
Yeah. So after the game, Branch, basically Mahomes went to sort of high five or shake the hands of Brian Branch, and Branch blew him off. And I think it was Juju who got put out by it. And so Juju went up to basically jaw at him, and Branch hit him really hard, cheap shot in the head. And then there was sort of a little fight that broke out, and Juju basically, his nose was bleeding. And so it was just like a cheap shot a guy took that led to a bunch of guys tackling each other when they should have been shaking hands and getting off the field.
You know, it's funny, Bill. There's one word that I see different things happening in the league, and one word scares me, and it's a lack of respect for one another. First of all, it's a lack of respect for the game. Secondly, it's a lack of respect for yourself to do that. Everybody gets emotional. That's this game is played with a ton of emotion. And totally understand it, but it has to be controlled at some degree. And believe me, I guarantee you the league will step in and they'll understand exactly what wants, you know, from a respect standpoint for one another. But I think it's totally uncalled for. It's wrong, and it's disrespectful to the game. It's disrespectful to the team he represents. It's disrespectful to his teammates. Obviously, it's disrespectful to Juju. You know, it's amazing. It's like, show some class. Just show some class.
I agree. Joe Theismann hanging out here on the program. Joe, I want to circle back to sort of this quarterback talk we were having. And you and I have had this conversation about quarterbacks who were written off who are massively successful. I mean, let's give Sam Darnold a little bit of love. Baker Mayfield is playing at such a level. And that's not new, right? He's been good in Tampa Bay for a while now. But I'm curious what it takes, and if it's possible, for the pressure that is on organizations to give up enough so that GMs, front offices, coaches have enough patience with guys to tap into quarterbacks who, in some cases, just need some time.
You have to marry systems with personnel. In other words, you can't try and squeeze, you know, round pegs in square holes. It just doesn't work. Another one to talk about is Daniel Jones in Indianapolis. You know, Daniel Jones functions very well when he has a running back behind him. Jonathan, and I mean, it's, you know, you're talking about probably the best running back in football in Indianapolis, just like it was with the Giants. You know, when he and Saquon together, he got himself a brand new deal, a big deal. Then all of a sudden Saquon was gone and things changed. Now he's got, you know, now he's got, again, a great running back in Indianapolis. And you see the way he's functioning. But sometimes it's just a question of what system you get into, the people healthy around you. I don't care how you cut this thing up a thousand ways to Sunday, Bill. The bottom line is if you don't have an offensive line, you're not going to be able to do anything. Whether it comes to protecting the quarterback, when it comes to running the ball, when it comes to being able to control a game. If you don't have anything, and all you need to do is take a look at the Philadelphia Eagles a year ago. And then the biggest change in this football team, I think, is the offensive line. There's inconsistency up there now. They're not the same football team they were, because you never are every year. You know, I get a kick when people say, oh, this is going to be a great rematch. No, a rematch would come when you got two tennis players playing one another that have played each other before. That's when you're going to get a rematch. But in our league, you don't get rematches. You get names that rematch, but that's about it. It's a tough position to learn, and sometimes it takes a lot more patience than owners and coaches are willing to give.
Joe Theismann hanging out here on the show. Joe, let me end here, and we can try to give the Colts some love. You don't have to, but my the executive producer, Ryan, who you talked to, is a Penn State fan, and he's suffering right now. So
I know.
I'm trying to throw him a bone here. I think we both agree the Chiefs are probably on the upswing again. But the Ravens season, I think dire is a fair word to describe it. Obviously, with no Joe Burrow, the Bengals aren't much of a threat. They've lost four games in a row. The Texans have been. They've won a couple in a row, but not amazing. Is there a team, whether it's the Colts or the Patriots, or I guess I should give the Steelers some love, whom I forget, maybe the Jags, even though they lost to Seattle over the weekend. Is there a team in the AFC that you think can fill that void and at least be in the mix to be an AFC championship-level team the way we thought the Ravens and the Bengals could be?
The one I've been thinking about, and I thought about from the beginning of the year, is the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, with Daniel playing good, smart football and being able to run the football, their defense was really good a year ago. They just didn't have any complement to it. I think that's a team that everybody better pay attention to. I think the Colts are for real. And I think they have the players, they have the scheme, they have the concept. And like I said, their defense being good is not a surprise. At all, I think that they'll be knocking on the door. And Jacksonville, you know, you have to have great wins on a consistent basis. And Jacksonville has, you know, it's starting to reach some of the potential that they thought, you know, Trevor's had going in that direction. But and of course, and Aaron. See, the thing that's interesting in Pittsburgh to me is last year when Aaron was with the Jets, he was the general manager as well. He made personnel decisions. He wanted this player. He wanted that player. So they went and got him. Now in Pittsburgh, he wasn't going to do that with Mike. No, Aaron Rodgers is just playing football. And that's, you know, that's how good a football player he is. And if he just gets a chance to play football, then you get a chance to see the plays he makes, his awareness on the field, knowing where everybody is. And it's only going to get better and better, I think, in Pittsburgh as momentum builds with Aaron back there.
Joe Theismann, it is great to be back on the air. It's great to talk to you again. It ain't Paris, but it's close, my friend. Thanks for making time, pal.
You bet. Bill, take care. I'm glad you enjoyed your trip. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
You too, dude. I love Joe Theismann. He's the best. Joe Theismann hanging out on the show, talking some football. Ryan, the Colts, man. Great defense. He's probably right. Probably the best running back in football right now. Is that fair?
Leading rusher, Jonathan Taylor. Let's go.
Top two?
Let's go.
How do I describe the quarterback? Reliable quarterback?
I like what Joe said. He's playing smart football so far. Smart
safe
at this moment.
Safe quarterback.
Yes.
Game manager.
That's it.
Game manage, baby. He went Colts. There we go. A little positivity.
Hear that, Kansas City? Better be shaking your boots. It's not the Bills that's the problem. It's the Colts. Now,
I hope they don't have any connection to James Franklin. You know, bring him as an advisor. All right.
Also, there's some big games.
Let's do buy or sell next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
When he first got the job and he gave that funny press conference and he said he wanted to have his players bite off kneecaps, he did everything but growl. Ruff, ruff. Or whatever it sounds like when you bite off a kneecap.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Yeah, I don't know why I went full dog there. Good song. I missed the music. I missed your music, Ryan.
It's a lovely day. You're back.
Let's go.
Back in the States. You can't get this. You can't get lovely day in Paris, that's for sure.
Can I admit something?
Of course.
So I was under, look, if I'm about to offend you, I apologize. I was under the impression that, that French people were rude. Okay, aren't we all? Like, oh, they could not have been nicer. Could not have been kinder people. They were so nice.
Really?
So I'm really sorry to all the French people that I never told I thought were obnoxious who weren't.
Yeah, there, that's, yeah, all, that's a fair assumption.
So nice.
Huh.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. I actually think, you know this, New Yorkers are actually really nice. Maybe not on the train, maybe not when you're, you know, but I found New Yorkers to be as kind as any of the people I've lived every. I lived in Arkansas, Iowa, Wisconsin, California. I mean, just the list goes on and on. New Yorkers are so, so nice. If you go to Times Square and you're at the Chili's at Times Square, no offense to that fine company, maybe not, right? If you're in the tourist area, that's what I'm realizing. People are people. What an insight I just brought. People are people. I'm gonna win a macaroni award. I'm gonna win two macaronis this year. Didn't the macaronis just come out, or the nominees?
Oh, they did. If so, I missed it. Shoot.
Was I on there?
Well, we don't know. You know what? I can't say no.
I can't
say no right now.
You can't say no.
I can't say no. Maybe.
Marconi macaroni. You say potato. I say potato. Let's go. All right. Anything else you want to hit before buy or sell? How you doing? You feeling good?
I am. I'm feeling good.
Penn State. They suck, but they got their, but they moved on from their coach. $50 million.
Not bad, right?
Buyout.
Would you coach? Like, I know it's in the, like, they don't do it for the money. They're crazy people. And so you coach, like, until you die, basically. $50 million, though, does that make you, that has to make you reconsider. What am I doing in my life?
It's weird. You read my mind. So before the Cubs game, I got home just before the Cubs game on Saturday from the airport. And Iowa was on. My parents were there. And we were watching Iowa just destroy Wisconsin. Have we done a wellness check on Bart Winkler? I guess he got the Brewers through. So that, I mean, they shut him out. They put 30 some points. I mean, anyway. And I was looking at Kirk Ferentz, and his hair looked grayer than I remembered it. I literally said to my dad, "Why does that guy still coach? He's not going to win a national championship." And to your point, these guys are crazy. I wouldn't. I'd be retired. Be playing poker or something.
Imagine $50 million
to not work.
To not, like, you invest that wisely, correctly. I mean, he's already making a lot of money beforehand. You are set. Your kids are probably set for a while.
You're set.
Enjoy life. We're
I mean,
only
after
here one
taxes,
time.
25-30 million. Oh yeah. I mean, you are.
Take a consulting job if you know you really want to kind of stay in it, but also. Relax.
You could literally still just have press conference every week. You could just insult people if you miss that.
Throw other people under the bus. Make
yeah,
random excuses.
Right.
I was cloudy today. I was having a good day. There was one cloud in the sky, so I needed a full ray of sunshine.
This is on James. Yeah, look, the barista who made my Frappa Kappa Rockuccino, blah, blah. Just go at, right? Just throw people. I like it, dude. Throw people under the bus for no reason. Right. I'm excited. Dude, it's good to be back. It was nice being on vacation. A great time. Love doing the radio show. It's great to be back. Let's do a little buy or sell.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Let's go.
You know what? Let's continue the positivity, Bill. You're high off the big Paris trip. We talked a lot of negativity in college football. James Franklin sucks. Bill Belichick sucks. Let's talk about some teams that actually win games on the field. So a few big wins over the weekend here. Oregon. Oh, I'm sorry. Not Oregon. Indiana went into Oregon and knocked off the Ducks 30-20 to end the nation's longest current home winning streak. They are now number 3 in the country in the Red River rivalry. Texas took down number 6 Oklahoma. Alabama, unfortunately, came at your expense, Bill. Did win their third straight game over ranked opponent as they survived Missouri. And how about USC and Lincoln Riley taking it to Michigan 31-13? Well, we can, I think, easily say it was Lincoln Riley's biggest Big Ten victory so far. Buy or sell, Indiana had the most impressive victory to you over the weekend.
You know, that's a really good question because, all right, let's think this through. I'm going to ask you a buy or sell question to get to your buy or sell question. And this is what I want to ask you. Buy or sell, you think Indiana's win is more about Indiana's excellence than it is about Oregon maybe not being as good as we thought.
Bye.
Because Oregon's only good win this year was against Penn State, and that win was 30-24, right? So it's, I mean, unless you want to include Montana State on there. I mean, there's not.
Montana State may be a better win right now.
And I'm not trying to take shots. Look, Indiana gets the credit. I'm with you. I'll buy. It's the biggest win.
Buy.
In large part because it's on the road at Oregon. And by the way, I thought we were supposed to, I mean, I know Lincoln Riley's doing okay, but I thought we were supposed to complain about the travel and how difficult the travel is. It's so unfair, and maybe you just toughen up and get it done. Indiana gets the credit for the win because of their season last year and what they've done so far this year. They do. I'm not sure, and I thought Oregon was awesome. I thought they were going to be awesome starting the year, and so nothing I saw disproved that. And Indiana's a really, 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 really good team and good program. But Oregon hasn't really been tested. Other than that one game, which they lost at home. And their schedule is not very hard this year, by the way. They've got at Iowa. That's not that difficult. They've got, of course, USC. I guess it looks harder than it had. So we may not even know until beyond that. But it did occur to me. I'm not sure. I'm now uncertain how good Oregon is.
Interesting.
The Penn State... Penn State, you said it. I wish James Franklin was playing, was coaching for Iowa this upcoming weekend. If you barely beat a Penn State team, and I do think that the reason Penn State fell apart is that's what James Franklin teams do. As I said earlier, I think UCLA became a big game because you lost to Oregon. Then I think Northwestern became a big game because you lost both of them, and James Franklin can't win big games. That said, it just doesn't look as good on the old strength of schedule these days.
No, it does not. That what was once called an impressive win is quickly dropping down the ranks for Oregon. You are right about that for sure. In the NFL, Bill, Buccaneers quarterback Baker Mayfield was spectacular yet again on Sunday as he went 17-23 for 256 yards and two touchdowns as the Buccaneers moved to 5-1. They beat the 49ers for the season. The former number one overall pick is top six in the league when it comes to passing yards, touchdowns, and passer rating, as with that 5-0 record, Tampa Bay right now is the number one seed in the NFC. Buy or sell, Baker Mayfield is your pick for MVP at the 1/3 point of the season.
Oh, man. I mean, there's this Josh Allen guy.
Ever heard of him?
It's a really tough question because... I think the Bills are not entirely. I think Josh Allen's as valuable to them as Mahomes is to the Chiefs. Maybe more. They don't have a Chris Jones. I'll reluctantly buy, though.
Buy.
Let me ask you this question. Buy or sell Baker Mayfield as a top five quarterback in the NFL? However you define that.
Buy.
It's tricky because Lamar still is, but he's injured, and Burrow still is, but he's injured. So there's obviously this void to fill. But after the typical four guys, after Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, and Burrow, it's Baker, right? It's crazy. And I just got to stop doubting this because he's been good for a while.
Look, Jalen Hurts, right, I think was a popular pick. He's not played well this year at all.
I made that case a month ago to Spike Eskin's great joy, our former boss.
Like, Jaden Daniels has been fine so far. He's also been hurt in year number two. So, like, still want to see more.
He's been okay when he's played.
So, yeah, with injuries especially to Burrow and Lamar helps Baker's case. But even after those four, if you want to say just totality, Stafford's been there, but he's been fine.
Sam Darnold's been okay.
Sam Darnold's been okay. Daniel Jones this year has been okay.
I was going to... Daniel Jones has been okay. I interviewed Baker a lot back when he was coming out, and I remember how much I was just impressed. He had a natural swagger that didn't seem phony or off-putting. I do like it for him. It's brutal for Cleveland. I'm just going to keep bringing it up forever, Browns fans. I'm sorry. They drafted the right guy at number one and then got rid of him.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you think Baker is the Baker we see today if he stayed in Cleveland and never left?
I will buy that he could be.
Buy.
Like, Joe Theismann just said this, right? Joe just told us that it's system oriented, but the thing is, when you have a quarterback that capable, you build the system around him. Buy or sell, and it's a guess, it can go either way, that you think the Browns will find a better quarterback between now and when Baker retires than Baker.
Oh, wow. Let's just conservatively say, 7 years?
Yeah, I was going to go 7 or 8.
I mean,
sell.
Right? Kind of to your point, like, right. Even if they draft the guy, whoever it may be, insert whatever name.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's going to work
50%
out.
Chance he won't even make it in the NFL.
Right.
As a starter, is what the numbers tell you.
Oh, boy.
That's and so it's bad. Not as if they drafted Brock Purdy in the 6th or 7th round and then never started him because Trey Lance was okay and he went somewhere else and oh, that's amazing. And it's not as if it was, you know, whatever, Daniel Jones or somebody, and Daniel Jones is a bad example. It was a Sam Darnold, and they just had the wrong staff in place, and he didn't play well. Baker won a playoff game and almost beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead.
The proof was there. You're right. The proof was there.
By the way, the Bucs, we need to start talking about the Bucs more often. I have not done it. They are and this is connected, they're legit. They're a legit NFL Super Bowl level football team.
And props to them. Yesterday was the first time they didn't need a fourth quarter comeback or a last minute drive to win a game. How about that? A comfortable
And that's
win.
The thing about Baker. He can do all the things you have to do to be a top five quarterback in the NFL. But he also, and I'm not sure everybody, he is clutch. He can execute those moments. If you tell me that Baker Mayfield and the Bucs have the ball with 3.5 minutes left down, whatever, 5 points in an NFC Championship game or a game to get there, it doesn't matter who they're playing. He can do that. He can win that game. I trust him in a way that I wouldn't Lamar. Buy or sell, that's crazy.
Sell.
Yeah, I do.
That's not crazy at all.
I trust Mahomes. I trust Josh Allen. I trust Burrow. After that, who do you trust that much in that situation in the NFL? I think Baker's on that list.
Absolutely. He's without a doubt, bare minimum in consideration, and like a name of two or three guys for sure, fighting for that fifth spot, without a doubt.
Yep. I don't trust Herbert.
I would say Jalen Hurts.
Bo Nix.
But it's
Hurts,
also up and down. It's.
I think I trust Hurts. I'm not sure I trust his offensive line and his offense this year.
Fair.
Yeah. But Hurts is in the conversation.
It's interesting. Very, very good on Baker.
Are we two questions into buy or sell it?
We are.
Slowing it down because I'm so excited to be here.
That's okay. This one's going to need some context, Bill. Well, let's just go from good to really bad. The Jets, they fell to 0-6 yesterday. They lost in London 13-11. The Jets.
That whole sentence is, so you know what? Sell. This is the
Sell.
I watched that game because I was up so early. I was reverse jet lagged. I watched an entire football game.
My condolences.
Yeah, it was bad.
To you and everyone else, because that was really, really rough to watch. The Jets finished the game with negative net 10 passing yards after Justin Fields threw for just 45 yards in the entire game and was sacked 9 times, losing 55 yards on those sacks. That was bad. This was worse. Towards the end of the first half, Garrett Wilson walked off the field, Bill, as the Jets were trying to stat the ball after he was confused about what the hell they're trying to do offensively. Buy or sell, Aaron Glenn is trending towards getting fired after just one season.
Buy.
Buy.
It happens. Sometimes people rise to a level because of their excellence where they've hit their level of incompetence. It certainly appears that way. Buy or sell, Justin Fields' career is over.
Buy.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of the last shot. We both thought he would have some success.
I like him.
After week one. A little glimmer of hope against the Steelers. It has been.
They needed to win. Yeah. Yeah.
Really bad. Yeah. My goodness. We have a few questions left. Not a lot of time.
It's time for no context, buy or sell.
You're amazing. This isn't your strength, the no context. So I'm excited to see if we can just do it.
Well, we'll see. Buy or sell. The Ravens playoff hopes are still alive.
Sell. Done.
Sell.
Finished.
Buy or sell. Both the Falcons and Commanders will win in tonight's Monday Night Football doubleheader.
Sell.
Sell.
I'm also going to sell that any of us will win. Because why are we doing 2 Monday Night Football games again? I hate it.
So stupid.
I think neither of those teams will win.
Oh.
How's that?
Okay. A little Bears
really
Monday Night Football magic.
I don't really believe
that,
but I want to believe it.
How about that? All right. 2 more here. Buy or sell. The Mariners are your pick to make the World Series out of the AL.
Oh, I want it to be the case. So, you know what? Let's lean into the heart. Bye.
Bye.
I just came from Paris, city of lights, the romantic city in the world. Let's lean into the heart.
And let's lean to that heart one more time and test your love of a rival that you may do like. Buy or sell. The Brewers will beat the Dodgers and advance to the World Series.
Man, you blew my mind. Did I hear you right earlier in the show that the Dodgers have not beaten the Brewers this year?
0-6. The
it's
Dodgers
really hard
against
to beat
the Brewers.
A team 10 straight times. You don't have to, though, do you?
You just got to win four out of the next seven.
Yeah, 12 out of 14. Thing. That was bad math. Yeah, no, it's good math. I'll buy. Dodgers bullpen is garbage, and the Milwaukee's coming off a pretty emotionally charged, momentum building Game 5 win against the Chicago Cubs.
Against who?
I don't know. Got no. Dude, there's nothing more stressful and what's the opposite of empowering? What's the opposite of empowered? Feeling powerless. Good at words. I'm back. And more powerless feeling powerless than watching your team down a run. And then it became two runs because some random Brewer hit a home run. And just watching a bullpen just like, you know that you just get guys on base and just getting mowed down. And watching those guys be totally ineffective. And knowing that you're a Cubs fan, there's no rally coming.
What's more disheartening, the bats going quiet or your bullpen getting shelled?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's the bullpen getting shelled because bats going quiet happens, right? A bullpen just imploding, which we've seen happen before, is brutal to watch.
Neither's fun. The bats just feels like a slow death when it's like you're down 1-0, but it feels like 5-0 because these guys can't even put the bat on the ball. It's like, this, just kill me now.
When the Brewers, I think it was the 7th. When the Brewers went up 3-1, I was like, it's over. I mean, we're down 15-1, basically, psychologically. All right. I'm going to tell Ryan about my trip. And Ryan's going to tell me about how it feels to be a Penn State fan after we get a Sports Flash from Justin Rock.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Hey, Bill, football is heating up and basketball is back, so download the Prize Picks app and use code PRIMETIME and get a $50 bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. Monday Night Football doubleheader later today. Bills and Falcons at 7:15 Eastern. Bears and Commanders at 8:15. The Bills trying to bounce back after losing their first game of the season last Sunday against the Patriots. Josh Allen hoping the defeat can serve as a wake-up call for one of the AFC favorites.
Credit to them for coming into our home stadium and having a really good game plan. You know, it does wake you up in terms of like, hey, like every week we're going to get the team's best, whoever we're playing's best, and we got to play up to our standard. You know, at the end of the day, this is the NFL. Each and every week has got to be earned.
Another brutal blow for the 49ers. Linebacker Fred Warner suffered a dislocated and broken ankle in Sunday's loss to Tampa. He'll miss the rest of the season. Emeka Ebuka expected to miss time for the Bucs with a hamstring injury. To baseball, a pair of LCS matchups tonight. Game 2 of the ALCS between the Mariners and Blue Jays at 5 Eastern. Dodgers-Brewers, Game 1 of the NLCS at 8. With your Sports Flash, the bottom of every hour, I'm Justin Rock.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. This portion of the program is sponsored by Square. More than 4 million neighborhood businesses run on Square. To learn more, go to square.com or just stop by your favorite local business. See you in the neighborhood, Square. Ryan, I am sorry for Penn State. And by the way, the season was over when they lost to UCLA, and so losing Northwestern, I think is the right thing. The problem is, James, it's not binary. It's not James Franklin has to be fired, therefore Penn State will be successful. The real problem is James Franklin has to be fired, which means there's no way to tell if Penn State can or will be successful in the next incarnation. You don't want Matt Rhule. I would hire him. Cignetti, Kiffin, whoever we're pointing to, there are no guarantees. They should succeed. I was going to ask you this, but I didn't want to do it at the start of the show. Who has been more disappointing, James Franklin or Arch Manning?
Ooh, I mean, I would say James Franklin in part because like he had the resources to succeed. He's been on the job a while. They brought back all his talent.
Not seven. How many years has he been there?
He's been there 14. Oh, no, I'm sorry. 12 years.
12,
this is his 12th year.
I can't even keep it. I mean, that's forever.
Right. So, and he's like
12.
They were highly ranked for a reason. Had all this talent, all this coaching continuity. You got the defensive coordinator from Ohio. Like,
they had Drew Aller's back.
Right. You could, but, you had everything you could have wanted.
Oh, dude, and his injury, man. Oh,
tough.
Just insult to injury. I guess injury to insult is right. The actual way to.
Whereas Arch Manning, like, he is highly touted, but new offensive line, first-time starter.
He's supposed
starter.
To be the best quarterback in football. We've all kind of forgotten he was supposed to be the number one pick, Heisman Trophy winner, national champion.
And I guess to defend Arch, though, that's what everyone in the media, right, said, and fans said. Arch is not out here pounding his chest like he's Johnny Manziel. I'm going to be the best, and he's not delivered.
Fair, fair.
Like, at least, like the expectations for James Franklin were realistic because what we saw Penn State do last year, the talent, et cetera. We projected for Arch. We didn't, like, actually, there's no concrete evidence.
I'm not saying fair, but I still think Arch is, I mean, look, we projected Penn State, and we were wrong. I mean, we are wrong. The sort of general sports world is wrong. I think it is Penn State, but it shouldn't. The thing is, James Franklin failing is not surprising to me. Arch Manning failing is surprising to me. I didn't have the sample size to assess Arch properly. I didn't watch his high school tape. I had the sample size on Jamesy Poo. Even if they made that run sort of even if they made a run of sorts last year, I know he can't win the big game. I already knew that. It's brutal. And the other thing is that I don't think I mentioned, the problem in the modern era is because of the transfer portal, it used to be that if you didn't win for 5 or 6 or 7 years, you ran the risk of recruiting 16, 17, 18-year-olds who really didn't know a lot about you. Now, if you don't win for a year or two, it doesn't matter what they know about you because they can transfer out. Part of what extended that window was when you recruited a 5-star recruit, that dude was trapped. He couldn't leave. So if things went badly, he had to stay, and that gave you a little more runway, if you're any of these programs, to turn things around and capture the hearts and minds of the next recruit and keep it going. Now they can just go. They can just leave. And so it's always been true that if you fall, someone's going to fill your spot. When Georgia rose the way they have, when Clemson rose the way they did, someone would take their place. And with Clemson now not at the level that they need to be, someone's going to take their place. The thing about an Indiana is that that can be much more permanent, much more quickly, because you can now replace Penn State as just the dominant force in the Big Ten, and you can go recruit based on that. The impact of the recruiting on that can be immediate. It used to be you're Indiana, and you're better than Penn State, and you beat Oregon on the road, and Penn State loses to everybody, that, okay, in the next recruiting class, we're recruiting freshmen who aren't going to play until next year. If they play, it takes a few years to sort of incubate that benefit. Now, not only can you do it immediately, everyone else you're recruiting knows you can do it immediately. So it's like, not only can I go to Indiana right now, so can 15 other guys transfer if they want to. And so it becomes, I think, this, again, this sort of warp speed reality. And so the reason I think Penn State had to do this, on top of just how ugly it was, is a program can get away from you very quickly, just like, and it's hard to do if you hire the right person, a program can burst into the scene really quickly. Indiana is the example, the good version of that, and I don't, for your sake, Ryan, and I don't really like Penn State, but for your sake, I hope Penn State is not the example in any sort of lasting way of the bad end of that thing. These tipping points happen quickly now.
They do, and also think staying, you know, status quo has also put you in danger as well. So I'd rather take the chance, see, like, they could absolutely go down, could go up, better than kind of staying where you are, but just by staying where you are, kind of like with Dabo and Clemson, you're kind of going slowly down.
Let me close on a letter note. As I mentioned at the start of the show, maybe some people missed this, when I was at my vacation last week with my wife Lori on our 20th anniversary, we stayed at a fancy schmancy hotel on points. I actually looked up how much the hotel rooms cost, because I didn't look at it. I just booked them with points. I felt real, it was a lot. Like, if I had paid I can never stay there again. Like, oh, you know, I can't afford one night here, let alone 7 or 8. And as I mentioned, there was crowds of people outside. 1,000 people roped off security, where we had to exit the hotel because one of the members of BTS, the Korean pop music band, was there. I wanted to walk out. I wanted to put my shades on and walk out. I was going to put all black on and just start signing autographs. But Lori thought that would be obnoxious. Do you think it would work? Because my theory is, even though they're waiting for someone specifically, they would just assume I was famous if I thought they were there for me. Do you think I could have pulled that off?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Act obnoxious, like, sign them. turn to the security guard and be like, get my car.
I would love to see the security guards look. Someone the got back there.
Are you B from BTS? I'm Bill. From Billy Ryder.
I am B. You got that right.
I wanted to do it, but Lori, understandably, thought it wouldn't be as funny as I thought it would be.
It would be very funny.
I did rock the Insta, which I never do. I rocked a lot of Paris photos. A
lot of photos. But yeah, gets by people, the Eiffel Tower?
I just wanted to save them somewhere. I didn't realize that people look at that stuff. I got so many notes from people. Why do you follow me on Insta? I haven't posted in 3 years.
Insta's a big time app?
It's a big app.
So you posted the photos just to have a place to kind of like almost in, like your own photo album, if you will.
Oh, just like, okay, I have like family being like, send us photos. Like, I'll just put it on here and you guys can all go look if you want to see it.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Look, I enjoyed watching. I was living vicariously through you.
I'm glad that you got to enjoy it. I was thought I might see James Franklin over there hiding, you know?
If you went this week, maybe he could be there with all the free time he's got.
What do you think he's doing right now? Is he at his house just chilling?
Probably hiding.
You think he's in Happy Valley still?
I would probably say no. I would say no.
Fun show. Great to be back. We have a great week planned for you. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Joe Theismann. Thank you to Ryan Hickey. I'm Bill Ryder. Thank you for listening. See you back here tomorrow on Ryder Than You.